Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks to the council for the opportunity to provide an update on regional planning. I have a quick presentation that's up on the screen here, then I'll just see if there are any questions. Next slide, please. Or do I have control here? I do. Okay. And for the record, I'm Nick Napoli, N-A-P-O-L-I, with the Northeast Regional Ocean Council. I know John Weber is staff to the regional planning body, as is Katie Lund, who's here. John could not attend, so I'm filling in here. The Northeast Regional Planning Body, that's what RPB stands for. Doug Grout is the council's representative on the regional planning body. Last met in January and approved the framework document. That's essentially the framework for going forward with ocean planning in the region. That includes high-level goals, objectives for achieving those goals, potential outcomes, a timeline, and various tasks related to achieving those goals and implementing those objectives. Quickly, I'm going to run through these. The document is online. I'm going to give that URL in a second. I'm not going to read these objectives to you, but I'll give you a sense as to what the intent is here. So the first goal, healthy ocean and coastal ecosystems. Really, what this goal is looking at is this first objective, just creating baseline characterization of the ecosystem and the economy to support ocean planning and related decision making. There are some other objectives here related to restoration and conservation and developing a science plan for those things that we do not know about and we can't develop information for on the baseline. And I should say that within that first objective about characterizing the ecosystem and economy, that's where a lot of the work we've been doing with many of you, characterizing fishing patterns, and I'll show some examples of that using vessel monitoring system data, sort of falls. The next goal, effective decision making, this is really looking at enhancing federal state agency decision making for planning purposes, at looking at interagency coordination, enhancing public participation, importantly, looking to the data that we're creating for that baseline characterization and really determining how to get that data and information into the decision-making process and having it be a means for coordination. There are also two other objectives. One's missing here, but that are looking at how to improve tribal component of decision making. The fifth one that's missing here is really looking at how coastal communities, how we can improve and enhance decision making with coastal community understanding. The last goal here is compatibility among past, present, and future uses. And really what we're doing is looking at getting at compatibility by first taking a look at how things are likely to change. So that's what we mean here by developing future scenarios, trends for use, and decision-making. Is really we are previously identifying a baseline, characterizing the ecosystem, the economy, determining how we're going to use that information in decision-making, but recognize that if we're really coming at this from a planning perspective, that we need to understand how that information is going to change. So we're starting with the developing future trends and scenarios, some of which I'm going to talk about in a little bit. A general timeline for this year. I'm going to work backwards. In November, what we're really shooting for, and if you go to the framework document, you'll see a high-level timeline and some very specific tasks in there. In November, what we're shooting for is putting some options on the table for the regional planning body to consider about how it can achieve those objectives, those goals and objectives that it formalized in January. In order to get there, there's a whole lot of work between now and say June. That is, and if you go into the framework document, there's a number of tasks, actions, and more detail for what we're trying to do to develop that information. We have scheduled our next RPB meeting, which will be June 25th and 26th. The 25th is going to be more of a public workshop that's going to be discussing, focusing solely on the issue of characterizing marine life distribution, abundance, and related habitat. And then the 26th will be a more formal RPB meeting type context where we're really trying to provide a status update to the RPB on our progress towards developing those options that they're going to be deciding in November. We do plan on having public meetings in advance of that RPB meeting in November, likely in September and October. So just a quick update on some of the engagement and data development we've been doing to date in terms of CARE developing that baseline. I'm not going to go through everything to the left. There's even more groups that we've reached out to than what's characterized there. But just a reminder for to date with the commercial fishing industry, we've met with a lot of you, a lot of other folks, using vessel monitoring system data and trying to characterize existing patterns using vessel monitoring system data. Scoping going forward, everything on the right there. Through our conversations with many folks in the fishing industry and the managers, recognize that the VMS data, we now have additional VMS data that includes speed over ground, and we're currently doing an analysis of what's fishing versus transit at the recommendation of various folks in the room. And beyond to better use that data set to identify areas of activity for the fishing industry. We recognize there are a number of gaps that we do not have good spatial information on lobster fishing. We do not have good spatial information on fishing for highly migratory species. We have a gap with recreational fishing that some of the folks in the room, some of the states we've been initially discussing, some opportunities for how we might fill the gap for recreational fishing. There are other gaps related to understanding recreational activities. And then relevant to the last agenda item, starting to look forward in terms of compatibility and developing future trends and scenarios, we are in the process of finalizing a contract with the Gulf of Maine Research Institute to build on some of the studies that were just discussed about how we might better understand how fisheries are changing due to changing conditions. So building on a lot of the work that many of the folks in the room are working on and we just talked about. As a reminder, all of the data and information we're developing, we're trying to put that up on northeastoceandata.org. So you see these themes here. We're trying to build out these themes that characterize where these activities or where these resources are occurring and how they might change. As an example, this is a map we have up. I think most of you have seen this. I know I presented it here a year ago. This is the vessel monitoring system sort of data for 2006 to 2010 for scallop fishing. As I said, this is the information we're trying to tease out transit versus fishing using more recent data. And this is another example of just other industries that we're trying to characterize in the same way. This is large vessel commercial traffic from AIS. And we've been developing a lot of information using the AIS data, breaking it out, talking to the maritime commerce industry to determine how we appropriately characterize this information and what additional analyses we could do. And similar to the commercial fishing industry, how might this change? And then lastly, all the information on ocean planning can be found in neoceanplanning.org. And I believe actually the framework document is, you can't see it on this snapshot. It was just added, I think, yesterday to the front page. So if you want to look at the details of the goals, objectives, and the proposed tasks, there's a 30-page framework document right up on the front page. That's it. I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you for your presentation, Nick. Are there questions? David.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you indicated in your presentation, one of the slides entitled Engagement and Data Development, that you're going to contract, or you are contracting with a GMRI relative to sensitivity to changing environmental conditions. My question is, yes, indeed, GMRI does great work, but this morning we heard a presentation from the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, and it summarized briefly in their report to us this morning regarding their development of a new climate vulnerability assessment protocol. They've had a workshop of 14 experts to deal specifically with this issue. So my question is, Are you working with the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, and you expect GMRI to provide something different from what all the experts working with the center have already provided or are providing? Just clarify where you're going with this.
So the this was in response to a request for proposals we put out. This is one of the proposals we selected. We're still working out the details of exactly how they're going to do this, but much of what they proposed was working with folks at the Science Center and others to integrate available information for use in ocean planning. And I think the details of how we work with the Science Center on this are still to be worked out, but certainly that's the intent.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The whole structure of what you're doing is essentially you're doing the work of angels. I grant you that before I get started here. But the process itself is moving entirely too slowly compared with what history is placing on us right now. Under your objectives, you have characterized the ecosystem, economy, and cultural resources with baseline data and maps. And then below that, in number three, prioritize data and science needs. We have one big gorilla in the room right now that is not adequately recognized because of changes that have occurred in the very recent past, and that is the situation with wind power. We don't have time to mess around with this one. This is the priority item for us right now. And our response to it has been entirely too slow. Construction on these things is going to begin this year, later this year, and they've already given out the contracts on putting these units in place. Yet we have policy decisions that we're not even close to being able to render at this time. And we have to put this together, and we don't have much time for it. The new generating units that they're going to be using out there is the Alstom unit, the Allied 150 that comes from France. It's the most advanced unit in the world. Puts out 6 million watts per unit, and this thing is enormous. Its impact on the ocean bottom is going to be profound. It's going to happen. We're not going to say, oh, we'll wish this away. And all the news stories I've been reading lately that say that, wind power, that'll be okay in 30 years or so, that's all now obsolete. It's on the table right now. These units are cost-effective compared with anything else. They'll stand up against any other source of power in terms of the cost efficiency. So we need to move on this one, and I would submit that that is, right now, the number one priority for this kind of data acquisition. I'm looking at what happened in Europe. And they failed to make certain decisions up front. And I think we're in a uniquely good position for doing that. But we've got to recognize what needs to be done and get it done. In Europe, they did not make originally the policy decision on whether fishing would be allowed around these units. We need to get there. We need to know just what the fishing industry is going to be able to do around these units. And we have to have a commitment to that at this time. And then we need to, you mentioned here the three objectives, enhance interagency coordination, implement, et cetera. There's nothing there that specifically applies to industry. And I would submit right now that what we need is to make that policy decision. We have to make the policy decision that we're going to allow not just industry and your agency and our agency, but also the industry to be involved with this. We're going to need a kind of baseline data that they failed to get in Europe, and now they're wishing that they had it. They'll muddle through without it, but it'd be a hell of a lot easier for them, and now we know for us as well if we have the right baseline data to start with. And so so what we need to do is make those kinds of commitments. That's all I want to offer here, but we're talking about thousands of units out there, and they are enormous. The effect is going to be profound, and it's going to happen. And we need to make sure that industry is involved with this. There's no mechanism that I see for that to happen, and that's what concerns me right now. Industry has the platforms to do the kind of baseline data that needs to be done, and they need to be engaged. That's all. I guess that was a question. Here's the question. Are you guys going to do that?
Well, thank you for the motivation on the timeline.
One sentence or less.
I think... So We do plan, we had one round of discussions with the industry. That was primarily around characterizing existing patterns of use and understanding some of those issues. We do intend on having another round of discussions with the industry related to improving that information, looking at how it might change, and then how we might incorporate that information into existing decision-making processes like BOEM's wind planning process.
Tony.
You said one of your data gaps is the lobster fishery. What are you guys doing to rectify that?
Yeah, so through the first round of, and maybe Doug can chime in on this one because he's been as involved in it as I have, but through the first phase of work, we identified spatial information for the lobster industry as a major gap. We're just currently scoping out potential solutions for that. Doug may have something to add.
Yeah, basically, we've had a number of conversations, a group of from Meredith Mendelson and myself and John have been discussing this because really what we need to do this right, we don't have the funds for right now. So what we're trying to do is potentially scope out some pilot project that would compare different methods for trying to get information on what the best spatial information we can get off of the lobster projects, off of the lobster industry. You know, in an ideal world, we'd probably be doing aerial surveys up and down the coast on a monthly basis to be able to get that, but that may not be something that we can afford. And that's one of the big challenges here with this marine spatial planning is that this has not been authorized by Congress. This is an administrative order that's moved this forward. It's not like the councils, which have the Magnuson-Stevenson Act, that's authorizing what we're doing. What we, I think that's the kind of momentum we're going to need is congressional support in the future to really move this forward in the timely manner that Dave is talking about.
Other comments or questions for Nick? Dave.
Yeah, just a quick one. I don't want to belabor this, but with what Doug was talking about, the funding source, the amount of money that's going to go into the development of these wind farms and the structures themselves are going to require an EIS. And that EIS is, to me, which should be part of the overhead that the company bears. And if they want to work with the people who already have the expertise in habitat, then all of this should be doable. It should be able to be put together. The money that's going to be used for the DEI or for the EIS from the company should be funding this. And that's my way of thinking about this anyway. I'm not sure that we need a whole lot of other funding to get it started if we can get that commitment. There are a number of policy decisions that have to be made, and I think that's one of them.
Anybody else? Mike?
I think Dave has correctly raised the issue of wind power, offshore wind power, as being a runaway freight train, whatever we want to call it, that while this effort of ocean planning is certainly well-intended and desirable, it's probably not to the stage of development, either from a legal point of view or policy point of view, that it's actually going to have the influence that I think is necessary. It does strike me that as the EIS process moves forward, the vehicle is through the role that the council plays and the National Marine Fisheries Service plays in terms of its involvement in the approval or its views expressed on the EISs with respect to essential fish habitat. I mean, that was the intent of having essential fish habitat defined within fishery management plans. And if this is, as I agree with Dave, as big as any event that's going to occur in the next several years or decade with respect to essential fish habitat, this is probably the place where the council and the agency should develop a strategy for how it's going to, in effect, represent the interests of essential fish habitat in this decision process.
Dave, final word?
Yes, I want to thank you for that, Mike, because you're spot on. This has happened so fast. The breakthroughs, the engineering and the technical breakthroughs that have occurred have happened so fast they've caught everybody flat-footed, particularly us. I would suggest that we have a workshop to bring everybody up to date on just where this stuff is going. I'm stunned by how fast they've done this. It's a whole different world than it was even a year or two ago.
Ellen.
I'm going to be really quick about this. I've been thinking about everything that's been said around the table, and as far as funding is concerned, I worked on the baseline studies for the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant, which were paid for by the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant for a decade before they went into service, and it was required by the Environmental Protection Agency for them to do that. And I don't think that this has the standard for other power sources has been held to the wind farms, and I would ask that anyone in this room who is listening to think about this, because this is because it's a green energy, we seem to be giving it a lot of green flags, go, 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 without thinking about the repercussions in the future. So I really think that the industry themselves, if they feel that this is an important and a money-making venture, that they need to be able to put the money up to do not only have bonding for decommissioning, but also for the baseline studies a good decade before they start actually implementing and building the power source.
John.
Ellen, are you saying that if an industry wants to use a public resource, they should pay all the costs of analyzing? Is that what you're saying?
No, John.
Okay.
The power plants that were put up in the U.S. In the past and in the future have to do baseline studies for the Environmental Protection Agency on the areas that they're going to be affecting. And for the nuclear power plant in Seabrook, it was for the outflow for the water. So for the wind farms, I think it would be the habitat studies for where their structure is going to actually be put.
Any further comments or questions? Thank you, Nick, for your time and your team. We'll be looking forward to your continued updates in the future.
Thanks for the opportunity.
We are going to move directly in the hearing. 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 In the hearing.